Welcome to Coffee and Therapy, where we spill the tea on therapy-related topics, sip our favorite coffee, and share our expertise with parents, professionals, clinicians, and anyone who could benefit from a little therapy.
Hello, and welcome back to Coffee and Therapy. That's my Alyssa.
That was really good, actually.
So much. It's Noah. I know I fooled you all so well that you thought it was Alyssa. But welcome back. It's just Noah and Sarah today. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Noah.
How's life in the South?
It's Southern. I'm loving the weather, I will say. I can definitely get down with Georgia weather. It's been really nice. I mean, like, it's 70 degrees, like,
and it's mid-November.
Yeah, I know.
Well, hey, here in New York, it is also mid-November. And it is, I think when I took my son to the bus this morning, it was 61.
Yeah, so that's the thing. I don't know. I keep trying to find out. No one can answer this question for me about the weather down here. I don't know if, like...
Global warming.
Right. Is this normal? Because it's also like this. I keep hearing from people in New York and New Jersey saying that it's the same thing. So I don't know, but I'm enjoying it.
TBD. Yeah.
I'm just going to accept it as this is the gift of Georgia. So
Georgia. Is Georgia the peach state?
So fun fact there. It is the peach state. However, my son has said probably a billion times since we've been here, like, he's like, I have not seen a single peach. What is going on? There's no peach tree. I think he thought in his head there were just like peach trees lining every street.
That's a logical assumption.
I would probably assume that. Truly, I have not seen any like peach orchards. I had to drive from Georgia to North Carolina a couple weekends ago. And interestingly, as I drove through South Carolina, I saw signs all over the highway for different peach orchards. They had those, you know, those water ball thing. What, I don't know what those are called. Like, they're like towers that are like big balls that have like water in them.
Oh, like a water tower.
Yeah, I guess. Whatever. Anyway, they had one that was
a ball, giant. It has water. It's a tower. Let's call it a water tower.
Yeah. But they had a giant one that was in the shape of a peach with like a leaf, and it even had like the little peach.
Oh,
like,
that's cute.
Kind of thing. Yeah. And that was in South Carolina. So I was like, I don't know if they redid the zoning or something, but
Georgia's due for a rebrand.
I think so. And everything is peach. Like, there's peaches on the license plate. There's peaches. All of the medical care is called like peach this and peach. Everything is peach, 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 peach. And I have not seen a single peach.
Well, so then you must be peach counseling now.
I am. Well, I'm sweet, Princess Peach.
Sweet peach countless.
Fun fact, my first AOL, AIM screen name was Peach Sweet 77. So I feel
find Sarah in the archives of AIM. If you're like, what is AIM? Yeah. That is probably going to be a common thought for most of our listeners.
We don't have to get into that. Don't worry about it. Those were different times. Those were a dark day.
we're sweet. We're peaches. And we're both here because I was texting Sarah earlier in the week, which I don't know if we've mentioned this on here, but Sarah and I are cousins-in-law. So, you know, I would say I think we were good friends before we started the podcast. Sarah was one of the bridesmaids in my wedding. So we just have like a text thread constantly going. And I was driving and I was like, oh, I'm thinking of Sarah. And so I messaged her. I'm like, do you want to do an episode about parenting and being a therapist and how we don't have it all figured out and how we balance all of that? Because I don't know how to put this other than that. It's really hard. It's really, really hard. And I'm coming out of my maternity leave now with my third kiddo, and my other two are still pretty young. So there's just a lot of involvement that they need and I enjoy, but that they need from me when sometimes I just feel really depleted. And I know if anyone understands that really well, it's Sarah.
Yes, I do. I do. It was funny because when Noah texted me that, like, I am not a very organized person. I think we've talked about my ADHD on here. Sometimes my executive functioning is not very functioning. And so I'm very famous for being like, yeah, that sounds great. And then like forgetting about something and then just winging it. Spoiler alert.
Heyo. We love a good improv situation.
Yes. But in this particular instance, I think I said she had to turn her phone on do not disturb like halfway through because I think I sent like 14 like paragraph messages back to back to back. Like, yes.
No, I was driving. I was driving. It auto puts it onto do not disturb. No.
I was not offended. I was like, I'm doing the absolute most right now. So I get it.
Oh, no. There are some chats that are muted like permanently. Like yes. Half of my family group chats. Like, yes. But no, you are not one of them. You are not an intentionally muted one.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
But but that's life though. Like that's really why we wanted to come on here is, you know, our kids are back to school. Sarah's moved, settled as much as one can be in a totally new place at this point. I have 1 week left of my maternity leave after this week, which I'm not ready to talk about. I'm having all kinds of feelings for that. Maybe that's another episode.
Compartmentalize that one.
Let's just say that their feelings about just wanting to be with baby longer. But I was just like, you know, what if we took some time to keep doing what we strive to do on this podcast, which is be very real, but also go beyond just the real talk and give some specific examples of challenges that Sarah and I have as parents and as therapists on a regular basis. And maybe some ways that if you are listening, whether you identify as a parent or a caregiver, whether this is a road you want to travel down at some point, or whether your caregiving identity is exclusive to the work that you do professionally, being able to have some specific ways to start not only giving yourself grace, but like identifying what requires all of your attention and what you can give 50%, and that is still enough. Right? Mm-hmm. Did I capture that well?
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I love that. That's a concept that I talk about so frequently in my sessions with people, is that there are some times when you can't give 100%. And even if you do give 50%, that's better than nothing. And, you know, it may not be your proudest moment. It may not be your best work. It may not be the best that you can do, but it's good enough for that. You know, you might not be able to sustain that forever. You know, 50% might not be a good goal to have for all of the things. But if it's something that is helping you to be able to give 100% somewhere else, or increase the percentage somewhere else, that is super important.
Well, and the thrive mindset is sometimes attainable and sometimes aspirational. And I am really, I'm an Enneagram type one, which means a lot of things, but in particular, I strive for a very high quality of, you know, the caliber of my work as a therapist, the caliber of my parenting as a mother, and having to, out of necessity, switch out of this thrive mindset into a survive mindset in some situations has been really challenging. But it's the more I talk with other parents, in particular parents with multiple children, they sort of laugh at me and say, like, girl, what took you so long? Like, yeah.
Welcome to the survival club.
Yeah. And recognizing that, of course, everyone defines survival differently. But for me, even just using that word in my brain has helped me to be a little bit kinder to myself and recognize that when it's 8 p.m. and all three of my kids are finally in bed and I don't have the bandwidth to catch up with a friend that I've been saying, yeah, we're going to go on FaceTime and I'm going to catch up with you. Like just being able to say, you know, I got a rain check. That's okay. You know, I can still be a good friend, a good mother, a good therapist by doing less and doing more for myself in ways that only serve me.
Mm-hmm. Listen, it goes right back to that whole oxygen mask. You got to put your own oxygen mask on before you put somebody else's oxygen. That's not how they say it. I know I'm messing it up, but something about the mask.
Because you were clearly a flight attendant in a past life. Yeah,
obviously. Obviously, I did such a good job. That's why
No, that's why you're still doing it.
But yeah, you know, you have to be able to help yourself, especially if you are a thrive mentality kind of person, because it is not possible. It's not sustainable. You are human. You are not, you know, a super creature. Like, I mean, you're wonderful. You are a super creature, but you're not a super creature, right? Like, you have to be able to say, I need to do some of these things for me in order to be able to be better for other people. And there's nothing more true than that than parenting. And
amen. I wouldn't change a single thing you said.
That's what's so hard about it, is there's so much pressure. And now with, like, you know, social media and just more access to more information, and people are really changing their minds about parenting styles and techniques and of the past that we are no longer doing. And I think I think that is a great, like, I think we did need to make a lot of changes in the ways that we view our interactions with children and our, you know, I think that's great. And there's also just dump truck loads of mom guilt or parent guilt or caregiver guilt or whatever that is just being thrown into your face, shoved down your throat at every single turn. And for us, you know, people in the biz, we're supposed to, we kind of assume that, or other people assume, we all assume that we sort of know how to do that, how to manage that. We know how to deal with it. We should just inherently know all of the behavioral techniques to work with our children and to help our children thrive in the best way possible and manage their big feelings and manage their big moments. And yeah, we have a lot of that information. And in real time, a lot of that goes out the window. I don't know for you, but for me, a lot of that goes right out the window.
Yeah. And Sarah, as someone who is a therapist and prides themselves on really being an expert or focusing in on maternal mental health, right? That's something that you've said is one of your areas of expertise. Mm-hmm. Would you mind kind of defining that into operational or accessible terms for anyone listening? And then if you're comfortable, being able to give, so maternal mental health, maybe from there, kind of talking about what are some of the primary topics or conversations that you tend to see come up a lot in your work with your clients. Mm-hmm. And then if you're comfortable kind of being able to share some personal experiences that you've had as someone who identifies as a mother, and I'm happy to chime in as well, just so we can start taking these theoretical ideas and being able to put them into realistic terms and start to talk through with anyone listening how we can start to change that mindset.
Sure. So if I followed all of that again with my executive dysfunction. So maternal mental health, from my perspective, the way that I define it for my practice, is really just, in the simplest terms, like taking care of moms from beginning to end. So that means sort of helping people manage struggles with infertility, managing struggles with prenatal, perinatal, postnatal, all that anxiety, depression, adjusting to life as a mom. For the first time, second time, third time, anytime, you know, that there's, as you know, with each kid.
Adjustments every time. Yeah.
Just because you have one doesn't mean you can do this with your eyes closed.
Yeah. It's not a copy paste situation.
No, it is not. No. And, you know, really kind of helping to manage. I feel like my main focus has evolved to being around those adjustments. That wasn't what my goal was when I first started. It just kind of organically became that, because I think that is the hardest thing.
And what you're probably seeing come up in sessions, like you're not initiating that dialogue. That's what you're seeing come up.
That's what's coming up, right? This is the need. We're going to fill that need. And then there's a huge part of it that may be a completely different podcast episode around identity. And, you know, especially for a first time parent, This is particularly challenging because up until the point that you become that parent or that caregiver, you are yourself. So your identity revolves simply around you. It's your job.
Maybe a significant other, you know, but yeah. But you're the leading character and supporting character.
Yes, exactly. Main character energy. So, you know, you have your identity is based in what you do, your job, what your hobbies and interests are, how you love, how you interact with other people socially, how you interact with yourself. You know, that is your identity. Mm-hmm. As soon as you become a parent or caregiver, that entire framework has to be completely rearranged because now your primary identity becomes that of a parent or caregiver. And there's beauty in that. There's wonderful parts of that. And I think we have to give people space also to grieve the loss of the identity before mom or caregiver.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I had lots of interests. I had hobbies. I had did lots of stuff.
Oh my gosh, hobbies? What's that?
I know. I heard rumors about what a hobby might be, and I think I feel like that would be something I would enjoy. But like I did stuff. I had a very full life before I had children. And it's not that my life is no longer full. It is full in different ways.
Yeah, it's full of different things. Yeah.
Full of different things. I don't currently have to grieve the life that I no longer have because it's not grief for me. I enjoy being a parent. I love my kids. I like, you know, there's,
but it is grief for some.
Yes. It is grief for some. Yes.
Okay.
But no matter whether there is grief or there's joy, there's always the loss of that previous identity. And we have to allow ourselves to grieve that. We have to, because it is a loss. It is a huge loss. No matter how much you love being a parent, no matter how much you love your kids, no matter how much you love your new life, you have to acknowledge the life that you have now lost and grieve that, or the identities that you have lost, or the identities that have changed and you've had to adjust, and you have to grieve that.
Yeah.
So that is a big part of what this work is for me. There's also the more maybe, I guess, clinical piece of what happens to our levels of particularly anxiety, but anxiety and depression after one becomes a caregiver of a whole other human, right? That is, if you don't have an increase in anxiety after that, I would probably be more concerned, but you become.
Right. To some degree, that's an important survival.
Right. Yes. Piece. Yes. Yeah. You know, the most basic part of that I can think of is before I had kids, I could sleep through like a tsunami.
That doesn't surprise me about you at all.
No, I know. However, now if like a mouse sneezes three blocks away, I'm waking up. I hear it. I feel safer, I guess, because I know I'm not going to sleep through any crazy things happening in my house or if there was like an emergency or, you know, but that is a huge, so because my brain is always on at some point, there's some part of my brain that is functioning and aware 24/7, which is exhausting and leads to a ton of anxiety. We have then
fatigue. I'm just thinking about like when we are flopping on the couch after the kids go to bed and we truly are like, it would take a lot to get me off of this couch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about what you're saying about your brain being that much more on overdrive. And it's like giving me some context for my own behaviors.
Yeah. Yeah. There's never a point that I'm picturing, I know we use the word compartmentalize. And I'm picturing my brain as like thousands of little boxes and there like are little light bulbs in each one of those boxes, like a refrigerator. When you open the door and the light bulb comes on, like that's what it is. The second you touch on one of those boxes, the light bulb comes on. It is never asleep. You cannot unplug that refrigerator in your brain.
It's like a motion sensor light. Yes, like, yes. But the motion is perpetual, so the light's exactly. always on.
So it's always on.
Shoot.
And that's what it is to be a parent. And so inherently, right, just automatically being that on all the time is going to increase your anxiety because you're now aware of things that you've never probably paid attention to ever again, ever in life before.
Right.
Think about as a new parent, you look at your baby and it's like, her nose is moving when she breathes. Is that normal? Why is her foot twitching like that? Is that normal? Does she sound weird? Did she drink enough?
Why are they shivering? I know that I every time.
How much poop is too much poop? How much poop is not enough poop? I can't tell you how many conversations you have about poop as a parent.
Am I supposed to be counting the diapers still? How many wet ones? Right. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Right. These are things that you never would have thought about before.
No.
I hope not. If you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not usually keeping tap of my own bodily functions, keeping track, let alone someone else's. So
And then you have to keep track of everybody's, right? Because then now you have to pay attention to everything. You have to pay attention to your own self more because if something happens to me, what's my child? What's going to happen to my kid? So now I'm more concerned about myself. I'm taking more stock in my own health, my own doctor's visits, and keeping on top of that because I have to be okay for my kids.
Yeah.
So we're just adding stuff to the list. So hello, postpartum anxiety. I don't think we should even call it that. I think it should just be like parent anxiety that will now last from now until the day that you die.
Yeah. It's not even like, oh, when society says, oh, they're 18, they're adults. Like then their needs and your relationship with those needs change, but they continue to be connected.
Yeah. Well, call my mom and ask her how that's going. Cause I am far past 18 and if you look at my call log is literally all my mom and like some random missed calls in between from like 800 telemarketers.
But I think that that's the point to make really clear is the second you flip that parenting switch, it doesn't go off. Yeah. It's a one direction switch.
Yes. Yes. So back to, I think my ADHD train just took off out the station and made a left.
No, you've been doing, I mean, this has been, I am really sitting here trying to work through some of my own thoughts and giving myself some of that grace that we talked about, we were going to talk about how to do. But no, please continue. Yeah, please continue.
So in my practice, this is what maternal mental health has come to be. It's sort of the struggles, the complexities of emotions that happen before pregnancy even occurs, whether that's with infertility issues, whether it's just through deciding to have a child, whether it's through just wondering if you want them, deciding if you're going to freeze your eggs, deciding what, you know, all of that
stuff. You're going to adopt, if you're going to foster, if you're going to whatever.
Yes, all of those things. And then through to the actual pregnancy where you're dealing with body changes, you may be dealing with loss, you may be dealing with grief, you may be dealing with trauma, you may be dealing with hormonal shifts, you may be dealing with relational changes. You're trying to manage your life and your identity while you are also forming a human being inside of your body. That's a challenge. So, you know, managing all of that, managing the expectations of maternity leave, which this country is atrocious with, managing how you're going to be able to pay for this child that you've now brought into the world because you don't have any time off that has a paycheck attached to it. Mm-hmm. How are you going to pay for daycare, which costs $4,000 a second? Who's going to watch your baby because you have to trust them to be able to do that? Keeping all of these in the front of your mind as you're now trying to keep this little creature alive. Manage your changing body and hormones, manage the shift in the relationship with your partner if you have one, managing all of these expectations, these fears, these anxieties, and these worries. That's a lot. Oh,
and you didn't even touch on the whole making sure that you and or whomever in your home is working, doing income-based work.
Oh.
Making sure that is also still happening.
I mean, I didn't touch on about a million things, to be honest, right? Like, yeah. So that's why this is so important. And then it goes even further than that. So for me, maternal mental health is the health of a parent for the entirety of their career as a parent, right? Because let me tell you something. What I have
is a lifetime career. It's got benefits. It's got exactly. It's full time. It is
overtime all the time.
Retirement package is interesting.
Yeah, exactly. So what somebody once said to me was that, like, little kids, little problems, big kids, big problems. And, like, that, again, made sense in my head. Like, yeah.
I don't love that.
Let me tell you something. The year that we had previously with my son, who's now 11, was the most challenging year of my entire life. Because we're getting into bigger problems. This is no longer like, I want this toy and my friend has it and I can't have it and so I'm sad. This is no longer, I wanted the pink cup for juice, not the blue cup for juice. This is no longer, I'm learning how
to... Why is the pizza shaped that way?
Right. This is not about, like, struggles with communication, right? These are like real life human stuff that is impacted by all of these things that are 100% outside of my control. Like, whatever happens to him when he walks out this door, I am no longer in control of that. I can't control his school, his peers, his teachers, his experiences.
I understand what you mean now more with the little people, little problems or whatever. I understand now. Okay.
They're heavier. They're heavier problems. They're problems that require a lot more intent, a lot more attention, a lot more intervention, a lot more support. And I didn't know that. I didn't know what that looked like until I had a bigger kid. And I'm realizing that the support for parents, you know, as our kids become more and more independent, I think there's like a myth that tells us, well, the more independent they are, the less they need you for stuff. And so your job gets easier. No. And I am here to tell you with 1000% confidence that it is totally opposite of that, because now they're navigating this autonomy that they have, this autonomy of themselves and in the world without any context or any of the brain development necessary to manage these things and to navigate these things. And they're also not sharing everything with you, because that's part of them growing and like having their own experiences, and they have their own privacy, and they don't. And so you have to like guess or hope that somebody says something that you can be like, oh, do I need to talk about that? Like, hey, let's follow up on that.
Right.
It is.
Yeah. You have to like intuit. You have to be like a mind reader, which is just never going to happen. It's just, it's not. No.
It's a lot. So that I've extended my sort of views on how I want maternal mental health to look in my practice to really just be like the support of the caregiver.
Primarily
for the mothers, right? I can recognize and 100%, I know there are dads out there that struggle. I know there are other caregivers out there that struggle. I get it. I also believe that mothers have been underserved in so many ways. Look at maternity leave. Mm-hmm.
Let's call it what it is. You identify as a mother. That is your lived experience. And that helps you to translate that into your work as a clinician. That also makes perfect sense to me. Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, very big, like, disclaimer again, like other caregivers, whether it's a parent, whether it's a teacher, whether it's a father, a grandparent, whoever, anybody who is providing care to a child needs support.
Mm-hmm. They do. Absolutely.
Full stop. Yeah. Period. Yeah. Like, come to me and we can call it maternal mental health, whatever, we can call it whatever. Like, that's what this is for. But that is sort of how my practice has evolved and how I am defining maternal mental health for my practice specifically.
Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of other clinicians will primarily focus on PPA, postpartum anxiety, postpartum depression, postpartum psychosis, you know, whatever happens.
Which is important. We need clinicians that are really narrowing their focus to provide a specific type of of care. And we also need clinicians like you, Sarah, that recognize this is a journey.
Yeah.
And it starts much earlier than we probably think. And it continues on much longer than we tend to recognize.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the first part of your question. I've already forgotten the other parts of the question.
Well, it was like, okay, now that we have some context for defining maternal mental health, defining the scope of your work, going into the real talk of you and me, and before we even started recording, you did a great job of saying how you had delegated some responsibilities that typically tend to be shared to your partner. And we talked about kind of the guilt or the expectations that you and I have set for ourselves, where delegating that or giving that to someone else. Right. So I'll stop so that you can really kind of reshare that.
So, you know, the guilt, the sort of, what's the word that I'm looking for? The like hot topic term is mom guilt, right? But we are talking about just caregiver guilt in general. But that guilt that we feel is so profound because it penetrates every single decision. It can be the smallest thing, like what we had for dinner. It can be the biggest thing, like moving my kids from up north to down south. Like, I have some mom guilt about that, right? I don't know if I did the right thing by pulling them away from the friends that they have and the social network that they have, my family being up there, like,
right.
Tons of guilt about that. Did I make the right decision? School system down here, which is notoriously like not as great. You know, did I mess up? Am I giving my kids the best chance for survival and thrival? Is thrival a word?
Sure. It is now. Like it.
A thrival, yeah.
You're welcome, thrival.
you know, and so that comes in it, and it just penetrates everything that you do. Now, for a lot of us caregivers, we are naturally, maybe, and maybe not naturally, but oftentimes handling or juggling the most plates. I guess you don't juggle plates. Juggling the most balls.
Balls.
Balls. Sorry, I have an 11-year-old son, so I just, that will, I am also a prepubescent boy at this point.
We're balancing
a lot of things. There we go. Yes. Perfect. Yes. Much perfect. Better. Much better. I am a grown-up and a therapist and a mom. So, you know, we're balancing all of these things. And oftentimes we are the ones, I think, who shoulder the most of that. And going back to our conversation about our previous identities as like independent women or independent people, we are used to just handling it. But now with all of these things that we've just been mentioning, we have just added like thousands of pounds to our backpacks. Like we are totally, totally maxed out. And so it is time really to be able to delegate responsibilities and to ask for help, which is really hard for most people. I don't think I've ever met a person who's like, oh yeah, I love asking for help. I'm really good at it, right? Most people are like, yeah, I have a real hard time asking for help.
Yeah, I'm laughing because I struggle with it big time. So,
and for a plethora of reasons, right? There could be so many reasons why that's hard for you. But it's hard for most people. And I think that a huge part of adjusting to life as a parent or caregiver is recognizing that part of yourself that you're not so comfortable with and saying, okay, I'm going to have to call in the troops. I'm going to have to ask for help. I'm going to have to ask for some assistance. I cannot do this on my own. Mm-hmm. So we were talking about this morning, you know, we typically share responsibilities in the morning with getting my little one to school at the most ungodly hour that her school starts at, which is another conversation. And this morning I was just not, I have some chronic health concerns and I am in a place right now where those are really starting to bother me. I'm having a particularly challenging time. And so I had to say, listen, I cannot be a part of the morning this morning. Like, I can't do it. I have to get a couple more minutes of sleep before I start my work day. I have to just lay down. Like, I just don't feel good. I can't do this. And here comes the guilt, right? Part of me feels bad that, you know, I'm leaving this really unpleasant experience all on my partner. Like, yeah. Nobody loves an early morning, and like trying to wrestle like a child who hates mornings and a dog who doesn't know how to handle themselves and a cat and like all these, you know, all of these other things. And then here comes this other guilt of me not participating in my daughter's morning and like not, you know, helping her get ready and, you know, taking her to school and giving her the hugs and the love. No, listen, I hugged her. I told her I loved her. Like, we did all of that. But I still felt so bad that I wasn't the one taking her to school.
Yeah.
I was like in bed while she was heading off to school.
Yes.
And I had
Why couldn't I just suck it up and do it all? It was only for half an hour. Why couldn't I just do that?
And I'm not dying. I don't think. Like, I'm okay. But there was my brain and body were like, Sarah, you don't feel good. Like, sit down, sit this one out. It's okay. Like, you've taken her to school every morning.
Yeah.
And have a day off. Like, it can happen. And I'm very glad that I was able to delegate that. You know, there are lots of people who don't have that opportunity. Yeah.
Yes.
So I am learning to take advantage of what I do have. And we were also talking about, you know, our expectations. Noah and I were talking about our expectations when it comes to the help that we receive from other people and recognizing that we have to be able to accept the help that we are given, even if it is maybe not the help that we had hoped for. And that's a hard one too. You know, there's a lot of layers that go into that also, because if you have a history of being unheard and you ask for help in a very specific and clear way, and that help is not given to you in that very specific, clear way, that can just sort of perpetuate that feeling of invalidation. And we don't like that. But also if you're saying like, hey, can you clean the kitchen? And somebody cleans the kitchen, but they only do the dishes and they don't mop the floor and they don't clean off the stove or they don't clean off the counters. Does that mean that you can never delegate that task because you're the only one who can do it? So now you have to take on that whole thing. Or does that mean, hey, guess what? You don't have to do the dishes now. And that's one thing taken off your plate.
And it's such an important, like, reframe, right? Mm-hmm. Can we call it that? That's really what, like, it's an important reframe.
Yes.
Because I struggle with all of that. I told this to Sarah. I'm sure Sarah already knew that about me, and maybe she like feigned surprise, but I hold myself and everything I do to an impossibly high standard. And I'm so lucky that I have people in my life. Maybe it's because I've attracted those people or I've sought them out, or maybe I'm just really fortunate and they're here. And you know what? I don't care how they got here. I'm glad they're here. People who want to just help me because they want to help me. There isn't some other agenda or some expectation surrounding it. They just are people who love to help other people. And I have really struggled up until very recently. And Sarah said, well, yeah, because now you have three kids. It's a necessity thing to like let them help me and truly accept that help in what Sarah is saying and recognizing that it might not be how I would have approached things, but that that help is so valuable in whatever form it comes in. Like, it's, and we're so good at, as therapists or as supervisors or whatever role that we have professionally that leads to other roles and identities, at being able to say to people, like, you have resources around you. Resources are only useful if you use them, right? Which is what I'm constantly saying in supervision. And I need to do a better job of not only like practicing what I preach, but really stopping in those moments where I'm starting to just feel really overwhelmed and be like, what can I do differently in this moment? Because this is just not working for me. And you did that so beautifully this morning, right? You're like, I feel all of this guilt, like I've acknowledged it, I've labeled it, I've recognized it, but in this moment, I need to take an action and it's, I can't do this. Can you please do morning routine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then managing the guilt that comes with whatever it is that you've asked for, whether it's just simply asking for help, just simply like having to form those words with your mouth, putting it on somebody else, allowing somebody to like take that on for you, then maybe not doing the thing that you were supposed to do in the first, you know, managing all that. So yeah, I mean, guilt is a big one. And then if we take a little turn over here to a different topic that we had talked about in our initial texting conversation, then for people like us who are in this helping profession, who are therapists, who work with children, who have maybe an extensive knowledge about all of these things, there is an entire boatload of guilt that comes with being somebody who is supposed to be an expert in this field and sometimes having that not work with our own children. And that, my friend, is a doozy. It's
a doozy. But hey, you know what, Sarah? We have so much to talk about, and we've just hit the 40-minute mark. How do you feel about us saying, tune in for part two?
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. I am very surprised. I was like, oh, this is going to be such a short one because it's just me and Noah. And like, we outlined it so clearly about like how, what we were going to discuss. And I was like, yeah, we could totally do it. And I was watching the clock go up and I was like, oh, we're.
And this, yes, we can record a part two today. We can record it at some point in the future, but I will leave you with an example, because what I want to make sure that anyone who's listening understands is this is not going to be an instance of preach it and don't practice it. Like Sarah gave a wonderfully real example. I'll give you one too. And then we'll be like, cool, catch you for part two.
Yeah. I'll be your accountability buddy since we're
You'll be my accountability buddy.
We're getting all these words that we're creating. Thrival.
Alyssa words. See, Alyssa, you're still here. You're here in spirit.
Yes.
You know. Last week, the week before, who knows? I'm on maternity leave. Time is irrelevant. My husband went out of town for work for an entire week. And typically, when I had two kids, I would just be like, I'm good. He'd offer, you know, do you want me to reach out to my parents and see if they can come stay? Because I'm fortunate that my in-laws are retired. And I'd say, no, like, I got this. And I would, like, it would be fine. Right? It'd be fine. I'd definitely be super stressed. I would definitely have more wine than I typically would at the end of the day. My husband would come home from his trip and I'd be snarky. Like I mean, we're not going to make the explicit designation for this, but I would be a bee. I would definitely be a big old bee about it and be like, oh, like, bet you enjoyed all that sleep in your hotel room. Must have been so nice to have uninterrupted sleep and be able to have dinner sitting at the table and have adult conversation, right? Like all those things where, and like, I truly meant it in like a biting way. And I'm not proud of it. So I'm just being totally real with you. And I would just spend what I would think to be like his formative, like first day back, just being like, how was your trip? Well, let me tell you all about my week, right? Like I wouldn't really leave space to hear about his trip and to just be happy that he had a great trip, because that's what I should be doing and what I want to be doing. I don't want to be like bitter and resentful because that's how I was acting. Mm-hmm. This past week, the second he told me months ago that he was going to have this trip, I was like, great. Do you mind if I reach out to your parents and see if one of them is able to, you know, come and help? Because like back then I was like, we're gonna have a newborn, like I'm just gonna be totally out of my depth. Like, and he's like, yeah, of course, like, yes, I love that for you, please
do that.
Please do that. Please. And not only was it wonderful to have them, they were exceptionally helpful. Of course things were done in a different way, but you know what, for the first time in my 36 years of living and 8 years of being married and like 13 years of being with my husband, I was really able to just appreciate it. And I wasn't keeping score and I wasn't, oh, well, this isn't how I do it and my way is better. I was just like, how wonderful to have this help while I sit here with my mother-in-law at the end of the day and eat this Ben and Jerry's and teach her all about the Golden Bachelor, right? Like I could really just be present and enjoy this. And yeah. Then when my husband got home, I mean, he's used to my snark and my attitude. So, of course, I made the, like, one comment. I'm like, oh, did you enjoy all that sleep? I bet your sleep score on your smartwatch was, like, oh, really high. But then I was just like, no, really, how was your trip? Like, and we could just have an interaction that felt good for both of us. Whereas before, I think it felt good for, like, neither.
Right. You convince yourself that it's going to feel good to say those things. And it might feel good for, like, a little brief second. It doesn't
because, like, that's not a relationship I want to have with my significant other where we're keeping score or it's a competition. Like, we're in this together. We're a team. Yeah. And I put myself in situations time and time again where I was not setting us up to operate and act like a team. Like, he was ready to be my teammate and I was off on my own. Mm-hmm. Race. And that's maternal. That's parental, you know, stress and struggle and guilt. Like Sarah is saying, is I really truly felt, well, like, why should I have to ask for help? I can do this. Like, and I am capable of doing it, but I can also be capable of doing it with help. And that doesn't diminish my own worth and diminish what I know that I can do. Like, it's better for everyone. It's better for the kids. It's better for me. It's better for my relationships. It's better for my long-term well-being and my mental health.
Yes. Yes. That mic drop. I mean, I'm like giving you snaps and all that. Like,
thanks for tuning in. Bye.
Okay, bye. We did it, Noah. We did it.
Good job. No, but I want to say thank you, Sarah, because most of what you said today, like, I'm still thinking about it and I'm like, I didn't even think about what is contributing to my everyday fatigue, my everyday thoughts, but also like what's making going back to work feel that much more like something I don't want to do. There is that element of dread. There is that element of like, but how am I going to do the morning routine? Because now we're outnumbered by children. And like you're saying, it's the little things from like, did I pack their milk? Did my daughter brush her teeth? Like, that's something I get bent out of shape about. And my husband's like, Noah, like, she's 2.5. Like, her teeth are going to be fine. Let's just get her to school. And I'm like, all right. It's, there's so much that goes into caregiver mental health. I think we just all need to listen to this on repeat or maybe just go see Sarah as clients. I don't, maybe it's
come on in.
She's like, here's my website.
I accept most major insurances.
Thank you. I would love to do a part two. So yes. We'll figure that out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Yes. And I do think that this, you know, when, just not to drag this out too much, but when you first texted me about this and I shot you my 4,000 paragraphs of ideas, and you were like, yes to all of this, like, the most simple, just like one affirming line of text. And I like physically felt a weight lift off of my shoulders. I physically felt lighter because it was like, I'm being validated. You didn't have to tell me anything. You literally said yes to all of this. Like, that was the text. And I was like, yes. She gets it. Like, and I know you get it. And I know that other moms get it. Other parents get it. Other caregivers. I know that we get it. I know we all know that we are in this struggle together. I know we know that. But sometimes just that reminder that like, this is normal.
Yeah.
You are not alone.
Yeah.
It is hard out here in these streets. Like, this is rough.
This is rough.
And just having that validation that like, you're not the only one that feels this way. Just because you might feel massive amounts of guilt this week doesn't mean that you did something wrong. It just means that that's the role that you're in. And I feel it too. It's so validating and empowering that that's what my hope was for this episode and for the next episode that we'll do. We'll definitely do that one. Because that's what this is for, right? We are trying to help people to understand that they're not alone, that their feelings are valid, that this is tough, and that we can do it. We do it every day. We have a 100% success rate at surviving life.
Yeah. We do. And that's what it comes down to. And again, we're now at 49, so we're going to wrap it up by 50. if this episode and the next episode series can just help you to start to reframe and really identify what's actually on fire, and how do we identify what's on fire, and how do we use context to inform what feels on fire and a necessity, then I feel like we have accomplished even just a fraction of what I think this whole conversation is set out to do, which is just give ourselves more grace, believe in ourselves more, feel empowered in decisions that we have to make, and know that it's going to be okay.
Yep.
But hey, on that note, bye!
Thanks for listening to Coffee and Therapy. Keep the conversation flowing and follow us over on Instagram at Coffee and Therapy. Questions? Thoughts? Ideas? Email us coffeeandtherapy@gmail.com. We can't wait for you to listen in again soon.